Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 77 of season 8 of Move Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film, Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Rebecca Denniston of Taking Up Room and Taking Up More Room. Welcome back to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, so you know, we're still shaking a little bit from you know, DeWitt's PTSD, the way that he's explaining things and stuff like that. But you know, we'll hopefully make it through today's episode also.
Yeah.
Or at least he'll make it through today.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a little more important than us making it through it.
Yes.
Trying to figure out how he's gonna make it through. Yeah. So minute 77 begins with DeWitt still telling his story, but clearly in shock, and ends with Ryben deciding that he wants to go help. Mm-hmm. So we're back in we're still in the glider, and we're having you know, DeWitt explaining to everyone what really happened, and you know, I guess in some ways trying to get some sympathy for the situation that he was put in, you know, without him having any way of you know, keeping the plane afloat, afly in the air, whatever it is. Yeah. And so this minute begins with him going, you know, we were just too damn heavy, you know, the grass was wet, downward sloping, all 22 guys dead. So I mean, first of all, I don't know how many people were supposed to be on the glider. You know, it's very possible that he's the only one who really made it out of the glider. You know, I don't think they had like 50. I'm not sure how many men they had on. I don't think they had like they probably didn't have that many more than, yeah, maybe they had 25 men on the glider or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They couldn't have had that many. I mean, the weight on those things was so dicey.
Yeah.
They must have be really careful.
Yeah, for sure. And at this point, Miller goes, all that for one general. And DeWitt goes, one man. And then Ryben gets his in, you know, gets his jab in there and goes, a lot of that going around.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I like the fact that you know, this movie constantly challenges us and makes us think about the fact of the idea of the importance of the few and the many.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way that they, you know, constantly talk about, you know, the mission or the man, and the man is a mission and all that stuff. I mean, here's another prime example in this movie where, you know, something is being done for one person. And, you know, they backhandedly, you know, give us like a little comedic line by, you know, by Ryben throwing that line out there saying, yeah, a lot of that going around here.
Wow.
You know, knowing that, you know, when you have orders, that's what you have to do. And you can't necessarily question your orders. And sometimes it might not seem as if your orders are something that you feel that you need to follow, but in the end, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, and if that is the mission, and the mission is one man and whatever. I mean, again, yesterday we talked about the true history of what happened with the lead glider. But, you know, again, it works the same way. You know, the idea is that you know, you have a Jeep that they wanted to be the first one out there. And, you know, in the end, there's a big casualty mm-hmm. along with others. You know, I don't yes. know how many. I don't know how many other men, excuse me, I don't know how many other men were actually on, you know, the glider with the real Amen, who, you know, who we said yesterday was named Pratt. So that I don't know. But, you know, we do know that not everyone made it out of that. You know, we know the co-pilot didn't make it, and we know that the general didn't make it, and the pilot broke both legs. So, you know, if DeWitt is supposed to be the pilot, you know, he I guess he's better off than the real pilot was, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah.
The response from DeWitt is, yeah, FUBAR. And then Rodman goes, "Fubar." And then Mike says, "Fubar." And then Miller says, "Fubar." We've already gone through the history of the word fubar and what it really means, so we don't have to reiterate
No,
it
it's
once
okay.
again from that whole thing.
You know exactly what it means.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Well, everyone does except for Upham. He doesn't know what it
Yeah.
is.
Is it in the
And
German dictionary?
that's right.
Yeah.
And then Jackson
Sorry.
throws in his and says, "You all got that right."
Oh my
And I
gosh.
love the way that they frame this shot, because we have Upham looking in through like a window of the glider.
Yes.
The way that they do this, this whole thing is just it's shot in a very claustrophobic way. Showing us how little space there really is in this particular glider, with
Yeah.
all the men just looking around and stuff like that, and they don't even all fit inside. I mean, Mike's outside, and then obviously we know that Jackson is leaning in by one of the windows, and then we have Upham who's holding a little book and looks through one of the windows and goes, "Hey, I looked up fubar in the German dictionary. There's no fubar in
Yeah.
there." So I
Really
love
quick.
the way that they
Yeah.
do that. So what do you know about the history of the dictionary?
FUBAR? Or is it
No,
just the dictionary?
of of a dictionary. Like when did people start using dictionaries? When was the first time that someone decided to create some sort of dictionary, like a word list and stuff like that? How far back do you think that goes?
That's a really good question. I would say it probably started with the invention of the Gutenberg press when the printed word was suddenly more accessible to people. I think all of a sudden people probably thought, I don't know what everything means in whatever I'm reading, so I need a dictionary to help me out. So that may have been where it started.
Okay, well, I
I'm
mean
just guessing.
that's okay. The idea of a dictionary goes even further back. I mean, even you
Yeah.
have that with the Sumerians and the Akkadians, that they would have all these word lists. Obviously, they didn't have the printing press back then, but it goes all the way back to the second millennium BCE, where they would write out lists of words with explanations as to what they are. You also have the Chinese also in the around the 3rd century, they also created their own type of dictionary. And again, I mean, you can throughout time after that, all these
Yeah.
different you find the idea of a dictionary popping up all over the place with the whole
Yeah,
thing.
that's true. Yeah, I was just guessing. I hadn't really thought about it before.
That's okay. That's what I'm here for, to make you start thinking about these things, because
Yeah.
who thinks about them beforehand?
Yeah, we just take it for granted, so.
Exactly. That's right.
Yep.
But then when if you're talking about dictionaries in Britain, so the earliest ones that first of all, the word dictionary was created by an Englishman named John of Garland in 1220. It was an early non-alphabetical list of 8,000 English words.
Oh, wow.
In 1604, there was an English school teacher named Robert Cawdrey who printed out his own dictionary, or created his own dictionary called A Table Alphabetical, which
Yeah.
had a list of all the different words that were used, and this was obviously purely English language stuff. And things just evolved at that point, obviously. And obviously the most famous one that we can think of as Americans, who do you think created the first American dictionary?
I want to say Ben Franklin, but that just seems too easy.
No,
That doesn't, I don't think that goes
it was
across the
after
table.
Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin was
Yeah.
had already passed away by
Yeah.
now.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, no, it can't be Franklin.
No, it wasn't Franklin. It was Noah Webster.
Ah, okay. Oh, duh. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Again, these
Yeah,
are not things that people
that's right.
normally think of. In 1806, he created a compendious dictionary of the English language.
Yeah, okay. I'm not completely awake, so sorry.
That's okay. Not a
I
problem.
totally should have thought of that.
So what Webster did was he learned 26 different languages, including Old English, German, Greek, Latin, Italian, Spanish, French, Hebrew, Arabic, Sanskrit, and used that to be able to create the etymologies of various words. And
Interesting.
he eventually completed his real dictionary in 1825, and it had 70,000 words in it, and 12,000 of them had never appeared in any published dictionary or beforehand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Interesting.
and therefore he also created the idea of American English spellings. For instance, like the word color, he took out the U, and the word wagon used to be, from the British perspective, is written with two G's instead of one.
Ah, yeah, that's right.
He changed the word center to CENTER instead of CENTRE. And then he added a whole bunch of American words like skunk and squash, which people in England didn't even know about. And he published it in 1828 at the age of 70, and he had sold 2,500 copies of it. And 12 years later, he printed out the second edition, which was in two volumes, because it was he had added so many more words over time. And then after he passed away, it was bought up by the company GNC Merriam Company in 1843. And ever since then, we have the Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
There you go. Yeah.
Because it's the combination of the two of them. So,
Very interesting.
yeah,
Yes.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think so too.
That's cool.
And so at this point, the men are all trying to figure out what's going on here. And as soon as Upham basically mentions the fact that he hasn't he's unfamiliar with the word foobar, so Miller doesn't really want to hear this. He's like, no. He goes, Upham, yes, sir. There are more paratroopers out there. Find out if one of them is Ryan.
Yeah,
Yes, sir.
not going there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
It makes you wonder if Miller is just getting annoyed with Upham at this point. Like, what could be, or is it just the idea that he's low man on the totem pole, so let's go send him to go do whatever errands we need to do right now instead of wasting time.
Yeah, like you are the weakest link.
Yeah, that's right. That is definitely true. And so at this point, Upham says, yes, sir, goes away. And then DeWitt pulls out a little satchel that he has, and you can hear the clanging inside of it. And he basically says, you might want to check these out, sir. Dog tags. More than I really want to count, sir. I've covered a lot of bodies. And then Miller takes the little bag from him and throws it to Jackson, who catches it pretty quickly, and he goes, Jackson, start going through those. Yes, sir. And then Ryben's had enough also and says, I'll help. So,
Yeah.
I mean, again, we'll talk a little bit more about this later, in the next few days or whatever. But my question is why are there so many dog tags in there? He just said that there were 20, what is it, 22 men
Oh.
that were killed. That
Yeah.
why would he have hundreds of dog tags if only 22 were killed there?
Yeah. That's a really good question. I mean, the casualties were so bad on the first day of D-Day. So I wonder if it's just because of how many people were killed. I mean, I heard that paratroopers were landing in the wrong places, they were getting shot down, and there were just all kinds of things that went wrong that nobody could have foreseen. And so, I mean, casualties must have been much higher than they were all anticipating, even though they knew it was going to be bad. This was still not what they expected.
Right. Correct. Have you ever seen Band of Brothers?
No, we don't have cable, so I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. I mean, it came out 23 years ago, so
Yeah,
I don't know if you
no.
need cable to watch it, but yes.
Yeah. No, we've never had cable. I've never seen it, so I'll have to find it.
Okay.
I heard
I
it's really good.
definitely, as a fan of World War II, I definitely recommend that you should try to find a way to check it out, because it's amazing. But they show there firsthand the way that, when the airborne was, when the airborne planes were bringing, all their troops, and just because of all the flak and the anti-aircraft shots all around them, the planes were going all over the place, and the way that the men were jumping out of them, just they really landed all over the place. And
Yes.
they do a great job in Band of Brothers showing how chaotic that really was.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's a perfect example of it. But again, I mean, first of all, right now we're probably 3 or 4, I think we're 4 days after D-Day, right? Because it was June 9th when they started their mission. So it's at least June 10th right now. It might even be
Okay.
later.
Yeah.
Okay. So then my question from that perspective is why is DeWitt still here if they landed on the 6th? These men are all sitting there for the last 4 days without trying to get back across their lines or whatever.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe his orders got lost, or maybe just everybody's just kind of reeling from the impact of D-Day, or it's hard to say.
Right.
I know
Again,
things
I mean,
got messed up.
we know that he's that he's suffering from PTSD, so maybe that could also be part of it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's just
That's
now coming
affecting
out
him.
of it. Yeah. So,
No,
yeah.
very definitely very possible with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Interesting. Ryben doesn't really want to stick in this stick around in this little claustrophobic glider, and decides he's going to go help, to expedite things, and hopefully find out if Ryan's in there, if his name is in there. Which is also, I mean, again, we'll talk about this more over the next few days, but that's also a very strange way to try to find Ryan, because just because you find a dog tag, they found this out 2 weeks ago, that the name isn't going to mean anything. You have
No.
to really make sure that it's the, because I don't know if it would say on the dog tags James Francis Ryan, or it would just say James F. Ryan. So it would still, even theoretically, if they would have found the dog tag of James Frederick Ryan, would it have been that much different? We don't know if they know his serial number or any other information about it.
Yeah, that
So
was my question too. It was like, wouldn't his serial number be on the dog tag? And they,
it's
should
possible they
have
have that
that.
information.
Yeah, they should have had that going in, but nothing went according to plan.
No, a lot of things don't go well. That's how you can make a 3-hour movie, because if
That's right.
everything went according to plan, they would have literally split, made it to where they need to get to, pick them up
There you
and
go.
turn around and already go back.
Yeah, they got to take a journey first.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah. All right. So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute?
Well, I just think it's interesting the way the other soldiers respond to it. I mean, you can tell none of them know what to say, and so all they come up with is FUBAR. And because it's one of those things, it's just like, what can you do? What can you say? We have to keep going.
Right.
And
Well, again, I mean, part of the whole idea of the term FUBAR is the fact that this is the life that we're dealing with in the army.
yes.
There are things going on that we just have no control over, and we don't understand why it's being done this way, but
Yeah.
it's because everything is just completely chaotic. So, okay, that's
We just
why.
have to accept it.
Exactly. We have to
Yeah.
accept that this brigadier general is dead because of some decision that someone made high up, and all right, we move on from there.
Yep, this is not the time to melt down. Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. We have to move on and get Ryan, and as we're going to hear Miller say later on, he just does what he's asked to do in order to be able to get that one step closer to getting home. And I think that that's more or less what everyone else is trying to do at the same time.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it stinks, but we have to keep moving, like you said.
That's right. That's right. All right. So every Tuesday, we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So
Oh boy.
once again, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. Well, I have to say I started with not with the Terminal as my number five.
Okay.
Which I know people kind of mixed about this movie, but I don't know. It's one of those movies that I can't help but like it because it's Tom Hanks moving in this very strange world of the airport and basically making his own way. And it's just, I don't know, it's different. It's a different kind of part for him. The whole Victor Dvorsky fake accent thing is a little bit hard to get around, but I don't know. He just does it so well. I can't imagine anybody but Tom Hanks playing a part like that. It's just, it wouldn't have worked. It would have been too corny or something otherwise. And then number four, I put That Thing You Do, which that movie is just so much fun. Oh my gosh. I mean, you hear the song nine times throughout the movie, but it doesn't matter. It's so witty. It's just so much fun. And you get to see a different side of Tom Hanks. I know he wrote some of the music for the film, as well as directing it and producing it and doing all of these different things. So he really wore a lot of hats in that movie. And just the result is just I think it's dynamite. It wears really well. I mean, even, almost 30 years later, which is really hard to believe.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. So
And
that's a good one. And then,
now I got that song stuck in my head. Thank you.
oh, I'm sorry. I knew that was coming. It's in my head too. It's just, you can't help it. It's just, oh my word. Thanks, Tom.
Exactly. Which
Okay.
you can't necessarily say it's completely a bad thing because it happens to be a really good song. It's a very catchy
It
tune,
is. It's
you know. So,
catchy.
yes, which is why they are the one-hit wonders, you know.
Yes. And it's just funny. I remember when I first saw that movie that we actually got recommended that movie by the video store clerk. And he said, oh, it's fun. It's just you have to get used to hearing the song over and over again. So we were like, okay, here we go. So it's just fun. There's a lot of good memories attached to that movie. Okay, number three, I put Apollo 13. That one I got to see in the theater a couple of times, and it's just Tom Hanks is such a great Jim Lovell. I mean, he's so steady compared to the rest of them. When everybody's bouncing off the ceiling and stuff, he's the one. Okay, Vox, go ahead. He's the one who switches back into the calm mode and keeps everybody steady. And that's just so typical Tom Hanks. He's just keeping everybody focused when things are going off the rails, and he just does such a great performance there. And that movie was really good. Even though obviously it's something we all know the outcome of it, but it still makes us, better our nails anyway.
Yeah, I remember hearing once that Billy Wilder loved he said to Ron Howard that the thing that he finds so amazing about the movie is that it's a movie about someone trying to fulfill their dream and they don't succeed in fulfilling their dream,
Yes.
but it's still so captivating throughout the entire movie.
Yes. Yeah, there were and they, I thought it was interesting. They took some really interesting liberties with that. I don't know if you probably heard about this, that shot where they're trying to frame the earth in the window when they're trying to get on the right trajectory to come back in. I heard that in real life that only took about 15 seconds, but in the movie they took 36.
Oh, wow.
To frame that shot. I remember reading that when the movie came out, and it was like, okay, let's draw the drama out here as long as we can, guys. That's the only reason you would do that. Number two, I picked Castaway. How can you not? Because that, I mean, it's Tom Hanks's Old Man in the Sea, except it's the middle-aged man in the island. And once again, it's a one-man show, and only Tom Hanks could have carried something like that because he doesn't have any kind of affectations or something, anything that would make him hard to take in large doses. He's he's very much the everyman, and so for him to be in this kind of situation, you just sort of relax into it, even though you're wondering, okay, how long is he going to be on the island, and how long is it going to take anybody to notice what's happened to him?
Right.
And so it was something that he just did so well. I mean, I can't imagine Like I said, I can't imagine anybody else doing that. Maybe Spencer Tracy, Jimmy Stewart, obviously, that would be the closest. Those would be the closest ones to what he did there.
I don't know. I don't know if Jimmy Stewart could have pulled off Castaway. No.
Yeah, I don't know.
I love Jimmy Stewart. I did a whole season on It's a Wonderful Life, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. Spencer Tracy, though, I think he could have done it, possibly.
Possibly.
The Old Man of the Sea. Yeah, right. Old Man of the Sea.
Right, he did do Old Man of the Sea. That's true.
Yeah. So he had those chops. Okay, and then my number one pick, and this is totally different than the rest of these movies, but I picked You've Got Mail for my number one Tom Hanks movie because I watch that thing every year at least once. And it's Nora Ephron. I also love Nora Ephron and Meg Ryan. And it's just like, it's everything, you know, it's all this good stuff come together. It's New York City. It's just such a great performance from him and from the rest of the cast. And it's such a charming movie.
Oh, well, okay. That is a great list.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Okay. Yeah, my blog address is takinguproom.com. And then the Substack address for Taking Up More Room is Rebecca Denniston at Substack.com. And then my social media, I'm on Twitter or X. Sorry, I keep forgetting.
Doesn't matter. Everyone knows what you're talking about when you say.
Yeah, that. I can't get used to that. I'm sorry. So yeah, X, Blue Sky, and Instagram. It's all Taking Up Room on all three of those platforms.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you feel like it's sending me an email, you can send it to MovieRobMinute@MovieRob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude, you